Welcome to the Brute Strength Podcast, bringing you worldwide experts from all areas of health and fitness. We cover training, nutrition, coaching, and mindset. Welcome your host, strength and conditioning coach, 2012 and 2013 CrossFit Games champ, Michael Cashew. Mind, body, brute.
Hey, this is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week's guest is Emily Abbott. Emily is a multiple-time CrossFit competitor, and this was the first time I got a chance to meet her. And I discovered that she's a complete badass. Not only has she competed several times at the CrossFit Games and done very well, but she has an amazing philosophy on life. And I got a chance to talk to her about the way that she trains that's pretty different from the rest of her competitors, the way that she thinks about competing, the way that she has developed the mindset that she has. And she gives some really cool concepts and even practices that you can use as well. We also talk about some fun things like sex and the term embodiment and femininity. And she's just, she was a joy to talk to, and there's a ton of wisdom to be gained through this episode. So I hope you enjoy the show as much as I did. All right, Emily, thank you so much for joining me today. I've been really looking forward to this one.
I have been very much looking forward to this. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with something real casual. I noticed that you have some cool looking tattoos, and I know that occasionally there are some really cool stories behind tattoos. So it looks like you've got some Latin or something on one arm and then some really sweet geometry on another. Do you have any like cool stories behind any of them?
Well, this one time in Thailand. No. Actually, they're not that cool. No, so the Latin on the inside of my right arm is actually, I guess that would have the most meaning to me because it's my family crest. And the crest is "Don't disturb the lion" in Latin, "Noli irritare leonem." And all of my siblings, I have three other siblings, they all have it somewhere on their body. And when we're 21, we kind of get this little gold insignia ring with our family crest on it. So it's kind of cool, you know, and I think it totally represents like kind of what I'm about. You know,
what is
don't
it mean?
Piss me.
What are you about? Yeah.
Like, you know, I guess I'll speak my truth, even if it's, you know, going to get me a little bit in trouble. And, I will, if you piss me off, like, yeah, I'm going to do something about it. And if you trample on the small people, well, you're going to piss me off some more. So I'm going to do something about it. So yeah, I think it's just more of like, I guess an identity, if you will, a family identity. And, yeah, I guess I think that's kind of like from what I've learned from my mom and dad, that's kind of like how we live is just like, I guess a little bit more brazenly, mm-hmm. and just not afraid to like make mistakes and to live like how you want to live. So, yeah,
that's so cool. You strike me as a really courageous person in the way that you speak and the way that you kind of live your life by your own terms. And so that's cool. It's cool that that's just a part of your family's identity.
Yeah. I think like growing up, my dad would always like kind of test me like on like these little ethical questions and he'd always like put me in like really uncomfortable situations, I guess, like working on the ranch and stuff. And so it's just like you had to either, you know, step up to the plate or just feel like crap or, you know, go to your room basically. So yeah, I think I've always been pushed into to be like, you have to step up and be courageous and be unafraid. But if I would never describe myself that way. So that's funny. That's very flattering that you would say such a thing.
Absolutely. So that's a really interesting thing you just said, about ethical questions, because my grandfather, mm-hmm. I grew up with him asking me IQ questions of the day, which I almost never got correct. And I really don't see a whole lot of merit in it's like trivia type stuff, but the right type stuff, it sounds like mind expanding. Do you happen to remember mm-hmm. one or more of the mm-hmm. questions that he asked?
Yeah. So my dad is by trade a lawyer. And so, interesting. Yeah. We lived in the country, so he would drive me to all of my various sports games. So we ended up spending a ton of time in the car together. And, he would ask me basically like all these kind of like lawyery situations and what I would do about it, because it's always, as you know, in the law, a very gray, it's not black and white, it's very gray. And so he'd be like, well, okay, let's say he said you were out with your friends one night and you came across a girl beating up another girl and you saw that she was beating her up and really badly, what would you do? And so I'd have to like think about this and like, you know, I'd be like, well, I would intervene automatically. I don't care what they're fighting about. I would intervene and stop the fight. So questions like that, and or if someone wanted to give me money in order to get what they want from me, would I do it? Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things, like basically, would you take money over your pride or money over what you really desired and those kinds of things. We'd always be talking about this and we'd have a lot of family discussions of this nature. So yeah, I guess that it makes you think, and it is mind expanding. And
that's really cool. Yeah. And how would he approach, like when you would come up with your answer, would he basically let you form your own opinion and stick to that? Or would he try to influence you in any other way?
He would have his smart lawyer rebuttals. Like, right. Are you sure you would do that? Kind of like testing me a little bit. And yeah, and also testing my convictions. He always respected me sticking to my story. So one time we had this shitty white truck growing up on the ranch, and all four kids drove it. And when it was my turn to drive it, I ended up like running into a pole or something. I basically kind of smashed it up a bit on the side, and I got home and I was like super scared. And I was like, I created this whole story in my head, what I'd tell my dad, and he saw it and he's like, what in the hell happened to your truck? And I was just like, you know, I think someone did a hit and run. And I basically just totally lied, but I was just like trying to save my own ass at, you know, 16, 17. Yeah. And he's like, oh yeah, are you sure about that? And I'm like, yes, like completely. And for years I stuck to that story. Wow. And he totally knew that I was lying, but he basically was proud of me for having the conviction to stick to my story. You know what I mean? So stuff like that. I don't know.
That's so funny. I won't even go into the whole story, but I had two of those same exact situations where I said it was a hit and run. Yeah.
I definitely want to hear about... Yeah, I want to hear about those sometime.
Yeah.
I don't feel like such an asshole now.
No, I was definitely a bigger asshole than you. Okay, so let's move on. It's the beginning of the year. Everybody's fired about, you know, goals and the opportunity to achieve something new this year. How do you personally approach goal setting or intention setting, if
So actually it's kind of interesting that you asked this question, because I've had a really hard time my whole life, especially when people are like, you need to write down your 1 to 2 year plan, your 5 year plan, your 10 year plan. That to me is like the most impossible challenge, because I feel I want to stay open to anything that life throws at me, because I could go down so many different paths and I think be very successful at all those different paths. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of run into the trouble with goal setting where I place a lot, and I'm sure most people do, on the result more than I thought. I was like, oh no, I love the process. But even when you get to those goals, I have found in my own life, the high, it's like I'm chasing a high and I get there and I complete that goal, but I'm not actually fulfilled. I've just like hit a high and now I'm like kind of bummed out, like a little bit depressed for a while. And it takes you like a long time to like get back to another goal. And then you kind of forget about this whole like fulfillment idea. And you're just like, oh, I need another goal.
Right.
So I've kind of been struggling with that. Cause like, what do you do, Michael, when it's like, we have such a do more, be more mentality, culture, but at the same time, like, how do you just enjoy like life, like the monotony or like the ordinary? So I've been kind of like for the past like 6 months, definitely asking a lot of people, maybe older people too, especially,
right.
How do you balance this? And like, are you fulfilled? And what is fulfillment to me? And so goal setting, it's a really tough one. I'm not much of a goal setter, but I'd like to be more of a fulfillment maker, right. I guess, if you will.
Absolutely. I think that's so poignant about the outcome never being as good as we thought it was going to be. You know, like the most excited we get in relation to a goal is when we set it and we feel like we're making progress, right? And so if we can kind of harness that, bottle that up, that's just pure magic right there. I interviewed a guy named Michael Gervais. He's the sports psychologist of the Seahawks, and he works with a lot of the best athletes and entrepreneurs on the planet. And he said that he doesn't do goal setting per se with any of his clients, that instead they talk about intentions. And something that I'm trying out this year, I may do a goal setting thing, I'm not sure, but what I am doing is setting intentions of things that I want to develop and just work on. So for instance, I have a really bad habit of making a decision before I have all of the information. Like I want to move fast. And I need almost no information to take an action. And a lot of times,
which has probably made you really successful.
Right. Except there are lots of exceptions in my life when it ends up wasting a lot of time in the end, and especially wasting other people's time when I don't get all the information in the beginning. So one thing I'm focused on is taking even an extra 60 seconds to, like, one thing I did wrong is I ordered a new refrigerator for us for our new house, and I didn't measure the space that it's going in. And so I got too big of a refrigerator. It would have taken me 10 seconds to take the measurement, and it would have saved me literally hours of waiting on hold, calling like Home Depot and Whirlpool to try to get this issue fixed. Right.
Right.
So my intention this year is just to take an extra 10 to 60 seconds to just make better decisions. And so there's no end goal there, but I've picked three or four things that are like super high leverage. Like if I nail these things this year, I'm going to have much better results in my life, whatever I choose to pursue. If I do these things, right, I'm going to have much better results. So I think that's a really interesting kind of spin to it.
Right. Somebody's old, like old men always say, like, you can either do it right or do it again. I always think about that now too, because like I'm someone who definitely like cuts corners or glosses over details. And I'm definitely trying to be a lot more like, no, thorough. I'm going to clean out every crevice of the fridge. I'm not just going to do like a little wipe down, you know? Yeah. It's like those little details that can like, that make your life a lot more functional.
Right.
For sure. Yeah. And not so like headachy for sure.
So as I was researching about you, I learned that you were the captain of the University of Windsor basketball team years ago, and you led that team to two national championships. That is really cool.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, how would you describe your style of leadership? Was it through action, inspiration, developing relationships with people? How would you describe yourself?
I mean, I guess it would be like a conglomeration of all of them, like a little bit of a mix up of all of them. I tried not to be like a tyrannical, like perfect leader, because I realized that I had a ton of flaws as a person and I wanted to get better. So I think I kind of led through a vulnerability, like, hey guys, I kind of suck at this, or like, I need help here. Like, how can, and I would ask maybe someone who's feels a little bit more excluded on the team or something, like, for their advice. And I think that would make people feel pretty, like, they would buy in more to the team dynamic when they feel like they're heard and appreciated.
And
so
they're contributing, right?
Totally. Cause yeah, I never wanted to be like lording over someone. I was like, no, I'm your equal. Like, I think you have like a totally unique spin on life. Like, I want to learn from you too. So yeah, I think it was a bit of that. And, definitely then like inspiration too. Cause I was like, the reason I loved playing at University of Windsor is because I had this crazy French Canadian coach named Chantelle Vallée, and she wanted to change the entire culture of the program, because when I got there, it sucked, and she changed it in a matter of years. And it was just basically because she pushed us hard. She wanted that perfection. She wanted us to be very accountable, and that I love that. I love being, at first I hated it, but then I realized, like, wow, like, I love being pushed. I love being, you know, pushed to my limits and tested on a daily basis. So that was super valuable to me, and has completely changed, like, the trajectory of my life. And so I text her and thank her often for, like, changing that for me. So, yeah, I just loved being pushed. And I think that kind of, like, you can't break me mentality, like, definitely help my leadership. Like, no, nothing can stop us. Like, right, we're going to always keep striving to be our best possible selves.
So you learned that you could do that for others in the same way that your coach had inspired that in you.
Totally. Yeah.
Anytime someone's a part of such a high powered organization like that, there's a shitload of learning that happens. What skills do you think you develop that carried over most to what you're doing now in CrossFit?
Oh man. Okay. So I know I can pinpoint it. Like, so my third year playing for Chantelle, she gave me this book, by Eckhart Tolle. Mm-hmm. What was it called? It's not the power. No, not the power. The other one, waking up your life purpose or something like that.
Right.
And when I got it, she gave me this book. And it's like all about ego. And I was like, so pissed off. I was like crying. And I was like, how? Yeah. It's so ironic, really. I was like, how could she think that I, Emily Abbott, have an ego? Like, I do so much for this team, blah, 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 you know, like just bitching and moaning. Mm-hmm. And I started reading it and I was like, oh shit. And I basically, the skill she gave me was a self-awareness of my own behavioral patterns, my own bullshit, and my own lack of accountability. Because, you know, growing up, like, parents are awesome, but like sometimes they try to do everything for you and like make your life right. But sometimes you have to just go through shit and to realize, like, oh yeah, I'm not special. I'm just like everybody else. Like, what gives me the right to think I'm better, that I deserve something? So that was huge for me. And then I was down in Mexico and this old Vietnam vet named Hal said to me, listen, one day you're going to wake up and it's going to be beautiful and terrifying, and you're going to cry and you're going to realize, like, that you're going to realize so much about yourself and so much about the world. And it was kind of in those, I guess when I was 22, 23, I really started to wake up and have a self-awareness, for my own bullshit, basically. And that has been so tantamount to my training in CrossFit, because I try not to make excuses and I try not to, you know, put it on anybody else but me. Mm-hmm. I'm accountable for my own actions. I'm accountable. Like, I love to travel. So, like, yeah, I realize that there's consequences to all that travel. So, you know, I have no one to blame but myself.
Right.
for anything. And I, like, I am totally the, I can control my life in all ways. So that was huge for me, and it's completely changed my life. And, I've become a lot more accountable, and I've stopped treating people like shitty. And if I do, if I overstep my boundaries with someone, like, I'm very quick to recognize that and to apologize. So yeah, that definitely was a, like, a huge life moment for me. And it was a big struggle, and I resisted it so much. And I realized that when people tell you something about yourself and you get really angry, well, it's probably because it's true. And, you know, like, and so you have to listen to that and maybe take a few deep breaths and reflect on why you are that way and how can you become a better person.
Yeah. So. They used to say this thing in AA, maybe this was just in therapy. If it, let it sit, if it doesn't apply, let it slide or let it fly or something like that.
Yeah.
Just sit with it and see the truth in it. And if it doesn't, let it go. It's funny that you bring this up because Adi and I are doing these talks and my portion of the talk is all about self-awareness. And one of the things I talk about is you have to make it safe for the, like, if you want to really accelerate your growth, then you have to make it safe for those closest to you to give you critical feedback, because it's like you can grow on your own, but if you have all of the people in your life looking out for you and helping you grow, your rate of growth is going to be just exponentially higher. But when you get defensive every time they give you feedback, they're not going to want to give you feedback. So that's a huge skill to learn. And what your coach taught you is just such an enormous, enormous skill and just so valuable to your life in general. That's so cool.
Yeah, it was incredibly humbling. And it's so interesting. Like, I'm sure with your wife, Adi, like, basically when you get married, you're basically shackling yourself to someone who's going to tell you the truth. And that's so hard. It's so hard to, like, swallow that pill and be like, yeah, you know what? You're right. I ordered a refrigerator that's too big. I'm an idiot. Like,
You are spot on.
Right. You're like, God damn it. Like, I know this is, like, a terrible part of myself that I need to work on. And yeah, you have to swallow those, like, daily pills, and it's so tough, but yeah, that it all comes down to self-awareness. Mm-hmm. So you say, like, oh, Michael, find the tape measure and measure the space. You'll, like, do that next time, right? And it's just like, it's only going to get better.
Right.
So through self-awareness.
What's one either question you can ask yourself or someone else, or like something practical that people can do to increase their self-awareness?
Oh, well, I would say, I like what you said, like, okay, let's spend an extra minute on this issue before I react to the problem or to the confrontation. Like, maybe I would say take a few deep breaths before you act how you always act.
That's a good
one. One thing that I do when someone starts to piss me off is I I go, like, you know, I kind of flip out if they're getting in my grill, and then I, like, storm off. Well, how is storming off going to help the situation? So, right? Like, you're going to make them feel bad. Someone was getting in my grill yesterday and I basically stormed out, and then I was like, God damn it. Like, Emily, you can't do that. Like, that's such not a way to, like, approach life, just to, like, run away when shit gets a little bit difficult. Like, no, like, be courageous, stand your ground, take a few deep breaths and hash her out.
Right.
So I would say, yeah, take those deep breaths, because that gives you the clarity to give you some perspective, or to take a step back to look at your own behavioral patterns.
Right.
Yeah.
Observe your, I talk about it in a way that you can observe your thoughts and your emotions as they're happening, rather than just being wrapped up in them and being reactive. Almost like held captive by those thoughts.
Totally. We aren't, like, emotions are transitory, right? Like, they're just, it's just a thing that passes by. And if you can learn how to, breathe through it, man, I think that's pretty valuable.
Enjoying this episode? Hit subscribe. We have more amazing content for you every single week.
Okay, moving on. So you talk very, I would say very nonchalantly a lot of times about competing and training. And and it seems like you have, it also seems like you have a really vibrant social life. You go out and have fun and you do a lot of rejuvenating activities. Is that, is this whole attitude by nature or more by design? Like, is it intentional to kind of take the pressure off, or what's underneath that?
I would say it's a little bit of both. I started training at Most Physical Prep, which is a place in Calgary. And it's run by a couple named Jen and Dave Swagger, and they have a football background, coaching background, a field hockey background. And they've studied a lot on, you know, coaching and, athletic development. And, when I started training with them, they basically said, like, well, what are your priorities? Like, if you're missing birthdays and weddings and, you know, important family stuff for being in the gym and training, they're like, we think your priorities are a little messed up. And that kind of like opened my eyes a little bit to be like, oh yeah, like I need to get out and enjoy life because that's who I am. And that's what makes me happy. I totally respect those people who can go in and just be like totally robotic about their training and like, they're so consistent and steady. At least that's what it looks like from an outside perspective. Mm-hmm. But for me, if I'm not using my body, if I'm not pursuing embodiment, basically, I totally get like bummed out about life. So like, it's kind of, again, it's hard. And I've been like I've always struggled with this. How much do I say my whole life is CrossFit and I'm so blessed to get to be able to compete and, you know, I work hard for that, but I could work harder. Or is it, well, no, I'm really like, I'm stoked where I'm at, but I still want to go snowboarding. I still want to surf. I still want to play beach volleyball. I still want to go into the desert and go to like a strange concert, you know, out in the desert for a weekend. Hell yeah. To me, like, that is the juice of life. And, if I didn't do those things, yeah, I think I would go a little bit crazy. It's just like life is so damn exciting. And like when I get to use my physicality, especially in nature, I can't, like, it's like the biggest high ever. Like I want to be doing that my entire life. And I guess CrossFit has provided me with a platform to do that. Like competing in front of thousands of people in a stadium is a, you know, again, a total high, and it's like super exciting. And but there's so many other facets of life, like rock climbing or learning a new sport, that to me is like, that is the actual, like that is living. So yeah, but that's what I constantly want to do, you know, like forever.
Yeah. That everything you said resonates with me so much. And I have a hunch that for you personally, doing all of those things actually contributes rather than takes away from your performance, because it's, you're doing things that rejuvenate you, that keep you from burning out, that make it so, like, you know, even from a neurological standpoint, when you're actually in the gym, you've got the juice to go really, really hard, right? A lot of people, right, they're adding so much volume and they're not recovering, resting properly, especially sleeping properly. And they're just kind of spinning their wheels, not getting a whole lot better. So I think your approach is holistic and it seems to be working really well for you. What do you, so what do you mean by the term embodiment?
Ah, okay. So this is actually something I heard about on some like sensuality podcast or something like that. But I was like, yes, that is it. Because I couldn't put into words for so long how I felt when I went and did things outside, or like, for example, like when I'm on a surfboard, like I was just down in Costa Rica in the past couple months, and I was on a surfboard sitting in the ocean and there's sun on my back, and you feel like, that is when I feel like the closest to a divine, like that's divine inspiration. That's right. Like you're one with the universe. We've all felt that, right? That's like that flow. That's what embodiment means to me. And It's when you're completely connected to your body, whether you're dancing or singing or walking on the beach. It's like you're in your body. You're in the right side of your brain. You've stopped thinking. You're just doing. And it creates like this space for me to be like super grateful and to just like completely fall in love with life. And yeah. And that's what like I'm becoming, it's becoming a lot more clear. Like that's, I think maybe my gift or like what I want to share with people is that I want them to like feel that and to get outside of like their trapped thinking and be like, no, I'm just going to dance without giving a shit what anybody thinks. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, I'm just going to totally like be brazen and like not give a shit because like life is so damn short. And I just like, what's the point otherwise, you know?
Yep.
I think, and I think as adults, like we have to have way more fun. Like, I don't know, kid. Like, I went to skiing the other day, and up at this sweet resort called Nikiska, and we wanted to do some tubing first at the tube park, but it was like completely geared towards kids. Like, it's a tiny little tube park. And I was like, you know, like more adults need to be going on the tube park and just like having fun. They need to create a bigger one for the adults.
Right.
And but I guess like, as we get older, we are like, oh my God, like, I don't want to get hurt. You start to get like all these weird little injuries, but yeah, maybe I'm just not old enough yet.
Yeah. Adults don't want to get hurt. And we also don't value fun like we do work and career, right? Especially in Western society. If I've had a New Year's resolution the past 2 years, it's been to have more fun because it makes me more successful in every single area of my life because it's what brings the juice to life, right? Like you were talking about earlier, it brings the juice. It's revitalizing. It gives me energy rather than zaps it. And it just feels so damn good.
Yeah. What do you do for fun?
A lot of the same things you're talking about. So get outdoors, I shoot a bow occasionally. I'm about to pick up jiu-jitsu again and like officially completely retire from competing in CrossFit and just do it as a lifestyle.
Nice.
Really excited about that. I got a ping pong table at our house, so I'm about to get really good at ping pong. I just like I like to play games a lot.
Yes, games. Yeah, totally. Okay, you should host like a big ping pong tournament. Okay. I will start practicing.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
It's
going to go down
on that. Okay. It's going to be big.
Big. Yeah. That's awesome.
So I listened to a couple of the shows that you did with Girls Gone Wild. And I heard a quote that went something like this from you. It said, basically anyone can show up to the gym and put in several hours a day, basically to the effect that, it's really easy. It's not really easy, but anyone can go into the gym and just check off the boxes, right? Like just do a shitload of training. And you said that a good training program is rest, I don't know exactly how you said it, but rest, nutrition, and hydration. Can you explain a little bit about your evolution of how you and your coaches view training and kind of how you ended up with that belief?
Yeah. So actually, like, I mean, when I first started CrossFit, I was 23, 24. And I went to the gym and I would just grind. Like, insane amounts of training were completed. Right. And that did definitely help me grow. But, you know, my rate of injury also went up. And I developed a lot of bad movement patterns because I just didn't give a shit. I just wanted to like get it done and get all this volume in and kind of wear that on as like a badge of honor. And I think like as CrossFit's evolving, so are training programs. And so I switched to Dave and Jen Swagger at CrossFit Most. And they basically were like, show me my training program, my yearly plan. And I was like, oh, this doesn't seem like as much at all. Like, are you sure this is enough? And they're like, just wait, go through it and you'll see. And my intensity started to increase. And then, my volume went down and I got way better. I felt way better. I was doing more corrective work. I was cooling down and warming up properly. I was sleeping more. I was, my nutrition and hydration were on track, and I was having way more fun. I had time to, you know, go on weekend trips with my friends. I had time to read new books. I had time to hang out with my dogs more, my family more. So yeah, it completely evolved, and it was just through a more precise, focused, training, yearly training program. So, and it seems like so simple now that I look at it, like, what was I doing before? But, you know, that's how you kind of evolve as an athlete. You just become wiser. So yeah, training less, but getting more out of the gym has been a huge game changer for me. Not even in a results based way, but like in a happiness, like daily happiness life way.
Right. Which almost always leads to a results based way, right? Those are so interconnected. I think the whole industry, the whole sport is trending in that direction a good bit. And I think it has to do with people just becoming more knowledgeable. Like before, we had no idea like how to mold all of these methodologies together. And so it was just, okay, well, we're going to do all of it all the time. Right. And now we're starting to learn a little bit more, and we can be more precise. So
yeah.
I mean, you look at the demands of the CrossFit Games, and you know, we know a good bit of what to expect. And so you can really hone in on your own personal weaknesses now, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. And I think, I also train a lot more like athletic development in terms of like explosiveness,
right,
and running. And I hang out, like, there's a lot of football players that come through this gym that I train at. And so I warm up with them, you know, doing football drills, agility drills, and I just kind of
type stuff.
Exactly. And I've gone to play more sports like basketball and whatnot. So it's kind of getting back to just being athletic, which I love. Like, that's, like I said, that's my embodiment. That's what I'm supposed to be doing. So, yeah. And I think, you know, strength and conditioning programs have been around for a long time. And CrossFit is just, like you said, it's overwhelming because there's so much to train. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think definitely now people are getting smarter, and that's so cool. It's going to create better athletes overall.
And can we have a moment of reverence for the last name Swagger? How badass is
right.
that?
I know.
Just luck out. God damn.
I know. I think there's even Nike shirts that say like Swagger on them, and it's like, dude, that's your last name, like on a Nike shirt. And they're very famous around Calgary for creating like really good butts. Like they have like, I don't know what, it's not like they do like cheesy like butt workouts like that you see on Instagram. They like create really powerful athletic butts.
Right.
Like everybody at that gym has a good butt. So we call it like the Swagger ass. Like everyone's in pursuit of that Swagger ass. So yeah, good last names.
That Swagger ass.
That's right.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you've gotten, over the last 3 years, you've placed 35th, 8th, and 20th at the CrossFit Games. So you're a seasoned veteran.
Yeah.
And the competition is stiffer than ever, right? There's so many more, especially women, right? I think there's been kind of an evening out over the past couple of years where there's just so many more competitive women in the field these days. So how do you get an edge at this point with so much competition? What are you doing differently, say, this year that you weren't doing last year, other than maybe taking a step back and having more rejuvenation, if anything?
Yeah, like, so I kind of went through a little bit of like a bummed out, I guess, time after the games this year, because I went from 20th to 19th, and I was like, God damn it. Like, I put in this entire year of work and I only bumped up one spot. And, you know, but then someone's remarked to me, well, you could have been 21st. That would have sucked too. And I was like, yeah, you're right. So I'm learned, like I said, earlier, I'm trying to learn not to be so results-based because the competition is so insane. And I can only marvel at those girls who are on, like, within that top 10. Like, that's, it's insane. But at the same time, the space between 10th and 19th is so minuscule. So it comes down to seconds, nanoseconds, basically, on how fast you can walk on your hands and stuff like that. So I try not to think so much about the competition because that's just like a cortisol booster. Like, yep. You don't need that, you know, like what's the point? I can only focus on myself and what I can control. And that's like good training, having like the best possible sessions day in and day out. So, which doesn't happen all the time. A lot of times I just would like to make it clear. I muck it up all the time. I'm like, oh, I went snowboarding and my legs are shot. Well, God damn it, Emily. You know, this is what you get. Like, if I stayed home and just like recovered all the time, I'd probably be doing a lot better. But I've made my choice and that this is who I am. So I have to deal with those consequences. But yeah, I don't do anything that special. I think if I looked at all my placings over the last year, it's not that I need a major overhaul in anything. I just need to continue to work on the weaknesses and, you know, like everyone said, and maintain my strength. So, you know, I've been doing a shit ton more running and, a lot more gymnastics volume and just maintaining lifts and always trying to become the most athletic person. And this year, what I'm actually going to focus on a lot for the next 6 months is Jen Swagger has a ton of experience in like positive psychology.
Cool.
Yeah. And so I'm going to work a lot on, when I first started CrossFit, it was easy, right? Like I would just go in and be like, fuck these bitches. I'm just going to do me and like kick ass. Like who cares? But now that I've developed more as an athlete and CrossFit's developed more as a sport, and now there's all these like fierce, tough girls out there. My mental game, I haven't put as much focus on that, and it needs to be way more effective. And I need to kind of get that mojo back of like, no, I got to get the swagger basically back of like, of being, yeah, I am a really good athlete. I am super valuable. Like I cannot wrap my self-worth up in placings, but I can wrap my self-worth up in how I present myself and how good I feel and show that confidence. So, and know that, you know, I have gotten a lot better. So if I see a gymnastics heavy workout, I'm like, yeah, of course I can do that. Yes, I can. So I'm definitely going to be working on a lot more like positive psychology. And I think it starts with number one is what I'm saying to myself on a daily basis.
Right.
So as you know, a lot of females kind of get into this trap of like, oh, I'm not lean enough. Or like, it's very like looks based. And like your ego starts to say these things to you. And they pick away at you over time. It's never just like it's a slow build up basically. And so I'm like, well, I'm going to counteract that and say positive things to myself, like all day, like you are a badass. Like I am beautiful. Or like, I am an awesome athlete. Like I kick ass. So those kinds of things need to be in my daily conversations with myself.
Right.
Because I'm like anybody, like sometimes society and the world just totally gets you down and you just need to be like, and yeah, a lot of times I just have to be like, no, like, yeah, I feel crappy about this situation or bum, this isn't working out. Or like somebody said something to me in passing that kind of bothered me. I'm like, okay, well, I have two choices. I can either like get all resentful and sad about life or courageously move forward. And so I'm going to choose the latter every time. And I'm not going to let life, you know, get me down basically.
Hell yeah. Well, I'm excited to see what you do this year, because I think that is the highest leverage thing that you can do. That's exciting.
Do you do a lot of like mental work?
Constantly. That has been my biggest passion for many years. And it started out as a necessity because I was a drug addict. And so I had a lot of mental health issues. And through therapy and in conversations with other alcoholics and addicts, I just developed this real passion for the power that our mind has over our behavior. And so, yes, yeah, I do a ton of that kind of work. I'm always tinkering with different things and talking to mentors. And I've learned that, like, through my own experience, like how you do anything is how you do everything. Like my attitude in my everyday life carries over to CrossFit, carries over to work, carries over to relationships, right? It's again, how you do anything is how you do everything.
Yeah. It's interesting, 'cause I just started reading a book called Succeed by this PhD doc, and basically how to, you know, successfulness, blah, blah, blah. But what I liked about it is that she's like, you know, you see really successful people like fail all the time. Like you see Barack Obama, like he was like stopped smoking for a while and then he like picked it up again. And you're like, well, why does that happen? And it's really interesting because basically like you have to think of like your willpower as a muscle. And it's like, if you start to let little things slide in your life, well then bigger things are going to slide. Right. And it's so true for me, because it's like, I get to this point where I'm like, ah, fuck it, all the time. Like, it doesn't matter, but those little things do matter. And, like keeping your house clean, like folding your shit, like all those little things are like strengthening that little, willpower muscle. So I have to remember that, because a lot of times I'm like pretty sloppy. So I always need to like get back to strengthening that muscle.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The simple act of making your bed has a huge impact on your day.
Right. It does. So true.
So do y'all have any rules, or do you have any personal rules around social media to prevent, you know, like kind of negatively comparing yourself to others and stuff like that?
Rules is just, no, I mean, like, shit. It's like, everyone is, I just don't give a shit. Like, there's like so much more important stuff out there. And, you know, I like anybody get into that trap of like, oh shit, she's doing this, maybe I should be doing that. But I'm like, no, you have a great training program. You're living your own life. So again, that's like a weakness, right? That you can't let get stronger. You have to like continually work your own mental muscle of like being like, no, that's bullshit. I don't want to compare myself to others. I love to get inspiration from others, and that's kind of like how I see it. But no, I don't really have any rules. Like, social media can be such a cool thing, a cool tool to use in your life. But especially since I've been spending time in San Diego and whatnot, I've had a lot more like great life experiences that, and I've put down my phone a lot more. And actually, I remember your post that you came out with saying like, let's all like get together and not have our phones out while we're talking with people. Right. Like, yeah, that's so true. Like, I think you gotta be really careful, and self-aware. It all comes back to self-awareness of, not to slide into that kind of vicious cycle of social media. Like, man, the less time spent on it, I think, the better. Use it for what it is, and then live. Actually, go out and live. Yeah. So,
totally.
Yeah.
I've definitely had to create some boundaries for myself, because it's just so, the phone is so addicting. They're just there's so many little dopamine hits, right? Like the messages.
Yeah.
The likes, the comments, the emails, it's so addicting. And so I've definitely had to create some boundaries around my own life to allow me to be more present.
And like what?
Like, the phone never enters the bedroom under any circumstances. The only technology we bring in the bedroom is a very simple clock. And so the bedroom is for what is it for?
It's for love.
No, it's for fucking. It's for
making three, love.
Like two or three S's. Sex, sleep, yeah, and something. That's what I'm trying to remember.
Shitting?
Maybe, no, you wouldn't shit.
No. And I don't know if there's a bathroom attached. I don't know. I was just putting it out there.
So
you know,
that's one. The other one is we will usually, like, if we go to a restaurant, either by ourselves or with others, we'll leave the phone in the car, so it's not even like a temptation to look, right, if it vibrates.
Yeah.
And then last night I was hanging out with a D and a friend, and we were watching the football game, and I noticed myself I think I was checking an email during the game. And so, mm-hmm, I got up and I went and hooked my phone up to a charger in another room. So I it was just out of sight, out of mind, and I could, right, be present with those guys. And it's simple and stupid as it may sound, it allows me to literally just enjoy the company that I'm with, right? Rather,
yeah,
than being in another place that doesn't matter, right? That's not in front of me.
Have you found your attention abilities have decreased over time?
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. The more kind of relaxed I am about those boundaries, the less I'm able to stay focused. You know,
yeah, that's crazy, because as a kid, I remember reading 2 hours every night before bed. Mm-hmm. I would just read. And now it's I'm lucky if I get in 5 pages. I just don't have that. Maybe I'm more tired, I don't know, but I just don't have that focus anymore. And I read this really interesting New York Times article about how this guy unplugged for a month from, mm-hmm, his phone, and he got back his attention.
Wow.
He was able to focus a lot more. So I would definitely one day to try, I've heard of people doing a week, you know, those kinds of things, actually just not being turning the phone off,
yeah,
and seeing how I am before and after.
Yeah. I mean, literally as simple as one day can have a huge effect. So WAG has, right, Saturdays are WAG unplugged, so that all of the employees can have an actual day off. And,
wow,
we just encourage people to take a full day with no technology, get out in nature, spend time with those you love. And some people have had some really, really cool experiences.
Wow.
We don't do that. You know, we don't do,
yeah,
that very often. We have the,
yeah,
the phone almost within arm's reach at all times of our life.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
And that terrified feeling when you're oh my God, I just left the house without my phone.
Yeah.
I don't know where it is. Yeah. God.
It's like
terrible.
Baby.
Yeah, totally. You know, my dream is to buy a trailer of some sort, or some kind of sweet shaggin' wagon, and you know, kind of go out into the desert and just not have a phone for a while. See what happens, you know?
Yeah.
A little bit of that off grid mentality.
Yep. So I have a few more before we wrap it up.
Sure.
We got the Open coming right around the corner. And obviously at your level, the Open is not something that you have to put much thought into. I'm sure it's just one and done. But if you were, what would you tell the athlete that, say, wants to just do the best that he or she is capable of? Maybe it's even a bubble athlete that has a chance at making it to regionals, but they have to really, really work for it. What would you tell those people in terms of preparing from now until the Open starts? What is there still time to do?
I think most people overtrain all the time, so I would definitely get that in check. And control the controllables, nutrition, hydration, and sleep, and make sure you're not freaking out about it too much. And I would approach it, if I was on the bubble, I'd be okay, I'm going to approach this like it's a do or die competition. I don't get second chances on this workout. I have to perform right now as hard as I can. Right now. So I would I think that makes you perform better, instead of thinking in the back of your mind, oh, I could do this two more times.
Yep.
No, have your game plan, go into it, execute, 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 and then be done with it. Move on. I don't like, don't try to do a bunch of extra workouts. It's just going to muck up your body, muck up your training. So yeah, I would say to have the one and done mentality, because that's how it would be at regionals. That's how it'd be at the CrossFit Games.
Right.
So maybe try to develop that competitive side of you, that no excuses, no bullshit side of you. Instead of just worrying about placing top 20 or whatever, I'd be like, how are you going to get better individually as an athlete, as a competitive athlete? Mm-hmm. And maybe look at the less tangible stuff.
Yeah. And I really, really, support what you were saying about overtraining, because I think people get so wrapped up in like trying to get every last bit of growth they can right before the open, and they end up with like a pretty fried central nervous system, and like they just don't feel like they have that top end intensity, if you will.
So
some of the best advice I can give is you need to have a probably 2 or 3 week taper leading up to the open if that's your season, right? You need to really ramp down the volume, and you need to do no more than one workout a day, because the open is a single workout. So if you're doing more than that right before the open, then you are running the risk of, you know, being overtrained.
Right. And to develop that competitive mindset, I remember reading this story about some baseball player, a pitcher, and he was asked about pressure and like leading up into a big game or something. And he said he always thought about, you know, if I don't do good, if I don't, you know, continue to play in the major leagues, what is the worst possible situation? Well, he said for him, like if he got released tomorrow, he'd be home in Montana fly fishing for a couple of weeks, mm-hmm. and, you know, and back in nature and back doing other things that he loves. So it's like, I feel like people put so much weight, into everything, into like the open. And do you really need to do that? Like, I understand, like it's my livelihood too, but if I completely fucked everything up, would my life be terrible? No, it'd probably be like, okay, like you're going to be okay. So I always try to kind of think about that. Like, even when I'm at the CrossFit Games, like if I completely fuck this up, well, guess what? I still have dogs to come home to, like awesome people to come home to. Like your life is going to be okay. So I don't know. I feel like people just need to like chill out a little bit more and just know that, you know, you are a successful athlete and you can do it. Like you can. So maybe it's more of a mentality thing too.
Yeah. And that's a really like pragmatic approach. Tim Ferriss calls that kind of like mental exercise fear setting. So like literally like think about or write down what is the worst possible scenario of me not reaching this goal or taking a certain action, right? And get real clear about that. And then also, what steps can I take to, you know, if I fail, what steps can I take to get to where I want to be? And it just immediately relieves the pressure.
Right. Yeah.
So I've got I've got some rapid fire ones for you, and then we'll
Okay.
What is your most gifted book to others?
Ooh, shit. One I just read that, I mean, I have a few because I've read a lot in my English major that I took at school, but one I just read, and it's more, of course, it's more geared towards women. It's called Pussy.
And
it like opened my eyes to like reconnecting to myself, and I would highly, highly recommend it for any girl, any woman.
Is it talking about like femininity?
Basically, yeah. And like reconnecting to our sensual selves. Yeah. And because we're told that like, as we grow up, we're never told about like female pleasure, and we're never we never talk about our pussies because it's kind of like this dirty, like scary place down there. You know, we have all these like euphemisms for it. So it's kind of, I'm totally fascinated with like the female body and like how amazing it is. And getting back to having more open conversations about pleasure, and everything that kind of comes with that.
Oh, that's rad. Mm-hmm. Again, that's one of those things that if your sex life is on point, like it radiates out into every area of your life. So I think that's a cool suggestion.
Dude, I'm so glad that you said that because it's so true.
As far as I'm coming to understand, it's even more important for women.
Yeah.
Even more important.
Daily orgasms have like huge health benefits. If you don't have to be in a relationship, even if you're single, and this is what that book talks about a lot. It's like, you need to know what's going on with your pussy because that's going to only help you train better, you know? Mm-hmm. So, definitely read that if you feel a little bit disconnected, which I think a lot of women do because we are raised to be, especially I think in the CrossFit realm, we are told to be super tough and we have to be, and we endure a lot of like pain or discomfort, but it's like, well, how are you also counteracting that? Like, how are you making yourself feel good? So,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
This is a whole nother conversation, but it brings out like a very like masculine quality, which is great for competition and oftentimes not so good for the other areas of women's life. Some
totally. Fine,
but a lot of them, I think it kind of shuts off that feminine nature.
Yeah, I agree. And like, honestly, Michael, like over the past like 6 months, I have totally realized like I shut off my feminine side. And, you know, I feel like I don't want to say this as a disservice to women saying that, you know, we're being too masculine. I think every man and every woman has a masculine and a feminine, and we go in and out of that. It's not like sexist or anything. It's just that it's just a reality. If you're more of a biological essentialist, but we have these sides, and if you don't nurture either side ever, like you're not a complete person. Basically, you're not seeing all that you have to offer. And once I start to embrace more of my feminine, I'm like, oh my God, like it was like I was like nurturing this little girl again. And it's been super cool, really powerful.
That's awesome. What's a belief that you hold that if others held would have the biggest effect on their life or performance in general?
I guess it would come down to accountability, be more accountable. You have control over so much. Of course, there's the things that you can't control, but accountability leads to self-awareness. So try to be, you know, accountable for your own shit.
For everything.
Everything.
That's what gives you true power. Love it.
Yeah.
What is one action that you'd recommend people take immediately?
go masturbate and have some fun.
Nice. Nice. I bet that's the only time I get that one on here. Hell yeah.
Oh, God.
And then what is one thing that you've stopped doing that's most contributed to your success?
Stopped doing that has contributed to my success. Well, I mean, it'll be a fluctuation. Like I'll kind of come in and out of it, but I've stopped beating myself up for missing a training session or wanting to sleep instead of go train or wanting to go have fun instead of go train. And I think that's really helped my psyche overall.
Right. Develop some compassion for yourself, it sounds like.
Yeah, like be easy on yourself. Like, and I guess maybe that's more of my like feminine side coming out. Like it's all good, like, you know.
Well, and also I'm sure you've learned as have I in the same way, like it doesn't really help to beat ourselves up, right? We're always looking for what we're doing wrong. And so when we identify it, we're going to try to correct it, beating ourselves up and, you know, whatever way that looks like for you, it doesn't really help the situation.
No.
And so when we learn that, we can, you know, improve and grow without all of the negative side effects that come with, you know, self-destructive thoughts.
Right. And even if you're having those self-destructive thoughts, well, maybe you just got to go scream a little bit,
right,
and like punch a pillow and maybe have some tears. And then you're like, okay, all right, I've got like that negative shit out. I can move on.
Right.
So for me, a big thing for me is like, so right now I have mallet finger.
What?
And, which is, I've ruptured the tendon on the top of my finger.
Oh, shit.
And yeah. And I did that by taking off a pair of pants.
Oh, I was going to say masturbating.
Well, maybe I weakened the tendon or something. Right. I don't know. That's funny. But yeah, so I have to put this finger is like in a splint for like a couple months basically. Wow. And yeah, I can't like grip shit and like, but you know, that's fine. Maybe it's, you know, the universe telling me I just need to run my ass off. Yeah. So, typical Emily would be very distraught and emotional and, oh my God, I can't train. I can't do what I need to do. But self-aware Emily is saying, no, this is just a little bit of a roadblock and, you know, you're going to be fine. You just have to go adapt the training. And so I'm not letting that spill over into all of my life and be like all emotional and shit. And, you know, it did for a couple of days. And I've learned now that I'm like, okay, I just need to like spend some time alone, watch a funny movie, like Netflix and popcorn, and you'll be good.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, it's not that we have to be perfect and like we'll always go back to like the way we are, but now you know how to recognize it and handle it better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So cool. Emily, you're a badass. This was a really refreshing conversation. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Kazoo.
Close. I'll take
it. Oh shit. What, how do you say it?
It's Kazoo.
Kazoo.
But
can it,
you're not
but
alone.
Isn't...
I've never had anyone, not literally not a single person
Kazoo
ever get it right on the first try. So.
Well, I'm like blushing right now because I like almost didn't say anything too embarrassing until the end. But I guess that happened. So
yeah,
Kazoo, as in cashew.
Exactly. But with a z.
Okay. Kazoo. Got it.
Yeah. All right,
thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. Your journey towards better fitness continues. Head over to brutestrengthtraining.com to connect with Michael and his guests. Access links and resources mentioned in this episode, as well as bonus content exclusive to podcast listeners. That's brutestrengthtraining.com.